And we'd ask Stephen Smith, Executive Director, Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, to come up. William Howie Rose, Director of Emergency Management, Roane County, Tennessee, to come up. And Mr. Smith, are you going to open it up?
I would be happy to, ma'am.
Okay, we will give you 8 minutes, sir. If you need to go over that, we'll give you a little extra, but we did run a long time, and there was good reason for that. So please proceed.
Madam Chair, Senator Alexander, and members of the committee, I want to thank you for holding these important hearings today, and I also want to recognize the community members who have traveled up here with me today. The devastation unleashed on this small community on the night of December 22nd is difficult to describe. Words and pictures do not do justice to the magnitude of this disaster. To see hundreds of acres of nasty coal combustion sludge, many places 20 feet deep, destroying beautiful lakefront property is truly sad. I have witnessed a host of emotions from families in this community: fear, frustration, anger, and depression. But most of all is betrayal. The Tennessee Valley Authority has unleashed devastation on the very watershed and communities that it was created to protect. Yet as devastating as this was, the fact that this occurred on a cold December night instead of a warm July afternoon, where people would have been enjoying the vast recreational opportunities of this once beautiful river, has spared potentially hundreds of lives. News reports and my organization's preliminary investigation indicate that this could and should have been avoided. Shortcuts have been taken, rules have been waived or broken, and accountability has been absent. This was not a natural disaster, this was a man-made disaster. It is clear that in its early response, TVA prioritized public relations over public health and has largely been overwhelmed by the size of this spill, which appears to be the largest industrial spill in our nation's history. The force of this accident not only ripped homes off their foundation, it ripped the lid off a national problem and the failure of EPA to develop minimal standards for this waste. It is outrageous that landfills that hold our household garbage are more regulated than pits holding this toxic coal sludge. It also washed away millions of dollars worth of clean coal advertising, reminding us of the reality that burning coal is dirty business. From mountaintop removal mining, which destroys the southern Appalachian Mountains, to air pollution, which chokes our cities, our nation's national parks, and leads to climate destabilization, to this toxic coal sludge, into which is now in a Tennessee River, burning coal is a dirty business. We can and we must do better. We have cleaner technologies. But this is not just a story of TVA's failure, but also EPA's. In 2000, EPA shirked its responsibilities by not regulating coal ash as a hazardous waste, and it promised to promulgate minimum standards. I am sad to report that over 8 years later, and 28 years since Congress first asked EPA to study this issue, we still do not have the most basic standards for this waste. This too is a national problem. Today, EPA cannot fully account for the hundreds of millions of tons of coal ash that are generated every year. And this problem is only going to get worse as we tighten our air regulations, removing more pollutants from the hundreds of smokestacks. We will end up with this ash in greater volumes and greater concentrations. Today, I call on your committee at a minimum to require the orderly phase out of all wet storage of this toxic ash. Require EPA to immediately inspect and monitor all toxic coal ash storage and disposal units. And third, to develop a long promised federal regulation of all toxic coal ash storage and disposal by year's end. TVA was born out of crippling economic times. And as we find ourselves again in similar difficult times, it is an opportunity to remake TVA as a leader going into the 21st century. The great challenge of how we produce and consume energy in this country cries out for leadership from the power industry. We need an agency like TVA to be a living laboratory to lead us into the future, heavily invested in advanced clean energy efficiency, smart grid technology, and clean, safe, renewable energy. This is the fuel for an economic recovery. This committee has the power to confirm up to 4 new TVA board members by May of 2009. We must ensure that these new members have relevant experience, a strong commitment to clean energy, and have a bold vision for this agency's future. Madam Chair and members of this committee, the operative words here today are accountability and oversight. The citizens demand and deserve no less, and we must have cleanup, not cover-up. That's the end of my prepared remarks. I did want to briefly respond to Senator Inhofe. We have, under 2 federal laws, filed the intent to sue. We've notified TVA of this under the Clean Water Act and under the Resource Conservation Recovery Act. We have not made a commitment yet to sue. We were so overwhelmed and disappointed about this, we felt that we wanted to sink a legal hook, potentially, into the agency to make sure they do the right thing. If they do the right thing, we may never sue. We are not intending to get rich on this suit. We are intending to hold them accountable. If y'all supersede us in doing this, maybe there is no legal activity. Now, I cannot represent other lawyers' activities that are going to take place, and I cannot represent the litany of legal activities that are going to go on. But my organization is not looking to enrich ourselves. We just want this cleaned up. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Rose?
Yes, ma'am. First of all, I'd like to thank you, Madam Chairman, for the...
Is your mic on there, sir?
It is now.
That's great.
Thank you.
Okay.
First of all, I'd like to thank you, Madam Chairman, for allowing me the opportunity to come and to speak. I appreciate the opportunity of each of the senators that are present here for this chance to be able to discuss the emergency response phase of this disaster that took place on December the 22nd. I would first like to say that all disasters are local. In their inception to their end of recovery, all emergencies are local. The local government stands as the first line of defense and as oftentimes the last witness to the recovery of a disaster. I intend to speak today about what the county has done immediately following the event of December the 22nd and to raise the concerns that the county has today and will continue to have for the foreseeable future. At 40 minutes past midnight on December the 22nd, 2008, the Roane County Emergency Communications Center received the first 911 call reporting a large mudslide that had collapsed houses and trapped occupants. Various emergency agencies, including the Roane County Office of Emergency Services, were dispatched to the location. Roane County Sheriff's Office units, while en route, encountered a large wall of earth obstructing Swan Pond Road adjacent to the north entrance of the Kingston Fossil Plant. The Sheriff's Office units then advised all responding units that there had appeared to have been a failure of the ash pond obstructing Swan Pond Road. First arriving responders arrived in the 100 block of Swan Pond Circle Road. There, the road became impassable due to debris from the ash light. Emergency responders arrived near the first affected residential structure at 1:06 a.m. An incident command post was established near 175 Swan Pond Circle Road. Initial rescue crews were sent to the Sheen residence, where one adult male was found extricating himself from a partially collapsed home. Mr. Sheen was not injured and did not request EMS treatment. The initial scene assessment revealed Swan Pond Road, Swan Pond Circle Road, and the railroad into the TVA Kingston Fossil Plant were impassable due to debris. Notifications to Norfolk Southern's dispatch advising them of the situation was made at 2:17 a.m. Emergency response crews began a door-to-door search of all residential structures in the area. Homes along the lake shore were evacuated due to the fears of secondary slide and the potential of ruptured gas lines to create fires in the area. One additional home that had sustained damage was found to be occupied. One adult female, Mrs. James, was taken to a nearby neighbor's home. At 3:49, the Roane County Emergency Operations Center was activated, as well as a shelter at the Roane State Community College, was open for evacuees. Roane County utilized its emergency notification system to contact all residents in the affected area to inform them of the event at 3:52. The Roane County Basic Emergency Operations Plan was activated to bring online all emergency assets of Roane County. Myself and County Executive Mike Farmer established contact with TVA at the Kingston Fossil Plant at approximately 4:45 a.m. TVA personnel advised us that they were in the process of assessing the ash pond and mobilizing their emergency resources at that time. A final search of the area was completed at 4:56 a.m., and all emergency personnel were ordered out of the area to a staging area at Swan Pond Road and Swan Pond Circle. At 6:36 a.m., the Rowan County Emergency Communications Center received a 911 call from the Norfolk Southern Railroad stating that their train heading to the Kingston Fossil Plant had derailed. Upon our arrival with TVA police at Swan Pond Road and Swan Pond Circle, communications were established with a Norfolk Southern representative that advised us that there were no injuries and the train had impacted the slide area, resulting in an emergency stop from the train crew. The train had not indeed derailed and was stuck in the debris. Unified command was established between Roane County and TVA Fossil Plant at 7:42 a.m. Local utility crews were sent into the area to conduct damage assessment of critical infrastructure at 7:50. Harriman Utility Board reported ruptured gas, water, and sewer lines, as well as numerous electrical lines down at 8:04. Roane County Office of Emergency Services terminated the emergency response phase at 9:30 and initiated recovery operations at that time, determining that all residents had been accounted for. The recovery operations began with the Roane County Building Official and Damage Assessment Team beginning their assessment of residential properties at 10 a.m. The building official reported three homes with significant structural damage that would require the residential structures need be condemned due to structural instability. These were the only three residential structures found to have significant damage. Further damage assessment revealed 42 pieces of personal property that had some sort of damage to docks or other ancillary structures. Utility crews reported that immediately following the event, there were approximately 60 homes with interrupted electrical power, 55 homes with interrupted gas service, and 37 homes with interrupted water service. TVA entered into various contracts with local service providers to rapidly restore these critical utility services immediately following the event. All utility repairs were completed on December the 31st. The Highway Department of Roane County, after performing a damage assessment of Swan Pond and Swan Pond Road, Swan Pond Circle and Swan Pond Road, identified that there was enough debris covering those roads that the Highway Department lacked sufficient equipment and personnel to accomplish debris removal operations alone. The TVA was requested to assist by providing heavy equipment and personnel to begin debris removal. The debris removal began on the 23rd and is still ongoing. Roane County's Office of Emergency Services continues recovery operations within a unified command system co-located with TVA, the State of Tennessee, and EPA organizations at the TVA fossil plant. Environmental concerns that Roane County recognizes the event have presented several complex environmental issues for the residents of Roane County. We recognize the need for both long and short-term environmental monitoring monitoring to be performed. Roane County does not have an environmental monitoring capability at the level needed for this recovery operation. Therefore, Roane County has requested of the State of Tennessee that air, surface water, groundwater, and soil sampling be determined to help us determine the environmental effect from the ash spill that exists now and in the future. Many unanswered questions about the environmental impact of this event still exist. It will take many months before we are able to fully characterize this event as it pertains to the impact of the environment and health of the area. Therefore, Roane County has requested from the State of Tennessee that an interagency oversight group consisting of state and local organizations be created for monitoring the recovery efforts. On January 5th, 2009, an after-action review of events following the response to the dike failure at the TVA Kingston Fossil Plant was held with the local emergency response organizations. Several issues were identified that need addressed as corrective actions for future emergency preparedness activities. The first challenge that was identified was immediately following this event, it was difficult to form a cohesive unified command system with the TVA due to the fact that TVA at that time was not using the incident command system as defined by the National Incident Management System. A corrective action would be for TVA, like all federal, state, and local agencies, to adopt, train, exercise, and conduct emergency response operations utilizing the incident command system as defined by the National Incident Management System. The second challenge that was identified was, to our knowledge, there does not exist for the TVA Fossil Power Division the same stringent emergency preparedness and planning program as does for TVA's nuclear and hydroelectric facilities. The corrective action that was identified was for TVA to implement a system-wide, rigorous, and comprehensive emergency preparedness program that incorporate all aspects of emergency management. The third challenge that was identified was, to our knowledge, a comprehensive hazard analysis and risk assessment had not been performed at the TVA fossil plant that would have identified the potential of the dike failure. The corrective action that the emergency response organizations requested is TVA should conduct and make available to the emergency response local community a comprehensive hazard analysis and risk assessment for all TVA-owned and operated facilities. And in closing, I would like to say that the events of December the 22nd has changed the face of Roane County. I count it a blessing that life not lost and that physical injuries were not sustained. On behalf of Roane County, I want to thank all the local, state, and federal organizations that have helped and will continue to help us deal with this event. I want to thank the TVA for their response in repairing critical county infrastructure. I am pleased to say that as of today, I feel that TVA has brought its entire cadre of resources to bear on this event. Many challenges, both environmental and economic, exist now, and many more will arise in the coming days and months. In closing, I want to say, as a lifelong resident of Roane County, that I have faith in the people of Roane County, and I know them to be relentless when faced with a challenge. I know that given the opportunity, they will rise to the occasion and create many solutions to the challenges that lie ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Let me just say, because my question is going to be for Mr. Smith, that what I intend to do is ask TVA to respond in writing to your recommendation that they answer the question as to why their emergency plans are very different. You said the nuclear plants have a much more stringent plan than this plant.
Yes, ma'am.
And given the magnitude of what has happened here, and as you point out, what could have happened here had this happened in the daylight summer day, and all you have to do is look back at what happened in West Virginia in the 70s, how many lives were lost because of the timing of that event. I'm going to share that information with you, sir. Well, Mr. Smith, scientists tell us that global warming will cause more extreme weather events, including heavier rains. And given what you know about this disaster so far, could more extreme weather events increase the likelihood of other impoundment failures?
Well, I think that is certainly a possibility. Again, the fundamental problem is that EPA has not fully characterized the extent of this problem. And so until we have a comprehensive review and understanding of the extent of the problem and fully characterize it, I think that that is a very real possibility.
Are you concerned about the potential for other impoundment wall failures at other coal-fired power plants?
Well, we are concerned. I think this problem has not been fully addressed, and therefore we are eager to see the comprehensive review. The unfortunate silver lining in this is that it has seemed to stimulate interest in review. I've seen a number of utilities now that have said that they're going back and beginning to look at this. But again, we need a regulatory approach to this so that we don't leave it up to the power industry to self-regulate themselves.
All right, and I think you were very clear in your testimony, and I feel you've made an important point. We have wet storage and we have dry storage. Now, when we asked that question to Mr. Kilgore, he said, well, the wet storage is the older way to dispose, and the dry storage is the newer, but yet there are still, as I understand it, some very live proposals for more wet storage out there. So I think your point that we should consider asking, and I will ask Lisa Jackson this when she comes before us, there ought to be a way to say that wet storage, we have enough proof to know that is very dangerous. So I guess I'd ask you for the record to say to me now, I've seen what happened in the 70s, I've read about it, I haven't actually gone and seen it, and I have certainly been briefed extensively on what happened in this case. Isn't that enough of a wake-up call for us to say that wet storage is simply not safe unless there's a way to do it that you treat it as a hazardous waste? So I would ask you what your thoughts are. I know you,
right.
I'm not expecting you to give me the definitive answer today, but we have some options here. We could treat the wet storage as a hazardous waste and require the kind of fill that they have for hazardous waste, we could outlaw future wet storage methods of disposal and go to dry storage, phase out the wet storage. What is your sense, having seen this terrible result of wet storage?
Well, my sense of reviewing the information that is available in the EPA records, and we've included in our testimony the March 2000, where EPA came right up to the edge of regulating this at a hazardous waste and then shirked away from that for I think, economic reasons and lobbying pressure. But my sense is that we absolutely need to keep this ash out of the water. Keeping it wet is not the proper solution. Every instinct I have, I'm a veterinarian by training, my science in biology and chemistry tells me, don't make this wet as much as you can. If you slurry it out, get into a point where you dry it out. And I think storing it wet, I mean, is unacceptable. And in my comments, I think we need to phase that out. I think that needs to be a very clear directive. That is an unacceptable solution. You know, I don't know in the, you know, full gamut of what the regulatory options are, but I can very confidently tell you today that, you know, if we regulated a hazardous waste, that may be direction to go. Some may argue that's too far, but I can promise you the lack of regulation we have right now is unacceptable, and that is one of the reasons why this accident has happened.
And it seems to me one of your biggest concerns and the concerns of the residents, in addition to what the immediate problem of getting rid of this stuff, and so I'd ask you two final questions. The answer I got from Mr. Kilgore I found totally unacceptable, that they're going to clean up the river, of course they have to do that, but they're not going to go to the coves, and they're just going to cover it over and plant seeds in it. Now, from your experience and your organization's study, because I know there were different studies done that showed more serious pollution problems and in the surface water. I'm not saying into the drinking water, I'm saying surface water. So do you feel that the community should demand a restoration of these coves as opposed to agreeing to live there with some plants grown over this stuff, this hazardous stuff?
Well, not to create a panic, but we issued a statement very early in this process that reminded people that there are multiple pathways by which people can be exposed to this. Largely TVA, originally out of the blocks, focused only on the drinking water pathway, and that's important. But there is the drinking water, there is the air, because as this dries out, the particulate matter, there is where you can come into physical contact with it, and we strongly encourage people to avoid touching it right out of the blocks. TVA did not do that. They did about a week later. But, you know, out of the blocks, we need to be aware of that. And then this will build up in the environment through biological accumulation in the aquatic life and others. So there are multiple pathways. My understanding of today, with all the information that I have seen, is this site has not been fully characterized. We do not know yet what is the proper way. I, in my heart of hearts, believe that it is going to be a much more aggressive action than what I'm hearing from the Tennessee Valley Authority. And we need to get that. But we need to fully characterize that ash pile. That is 50 years worth of different types of coal that have been stacked at that site. TVA has taken some samples. I was just talking to Howie earlier. It looks like they finally have done a core sample. There are going to be different concentrations at different levels because there's been different types of coal burned. And until we fully characterize that and understand what the hot spots are, we should err on the side of caution.
Okay, I think that is very key. So one of your key demands then, in speaking for the community, is to fully characterize what's in this muck.
Exactly.
And, you know, I wanted to point out, we saw a picture of kids, you know, walking through it.
And that is totally unacceptable.
That's, Senator, really unfortunate that TVA took a week before they said stay out of it. I mean, yeah. So let me thank you very much, both of you. I'm going to turn the gavel over to Tom Carper, step out for just a moment, and he'll he'll speak, and then he'll, or he'll call on Senator Alexander, then he'll close. I may come back. I think I will come back. But I want to thank both of you. And I think, Mr. Rose, if I might say, I mean, I hear in your voice this take charge point of view. You don't want other people to have to come in and help, but you are admitting to the fact that you didn't have the equipment. This was a huge situation for you. And I so admire your work. I was a county supervisor when I got started in life, so everything happens right there on the ground. And Mr. Smith, I think you've been articulate in representing the concerns of the people, and I think you've said it in ways that are very calm but very concerning. We cannot forget all of the stuff that's in this muck is stuff that's so dangerous that we pass laws to get it out of the air. So there it is, concentrated, and now if it gets back into the air or gets into the drinking water or even remains on the ground, it's a concern, and we need that analysis deep into this muck because of the different types of coal and the different types of problems they each present. Thank you very much, and I will call on Senator Alexander, and Senator Carper, you have the gavel for now.
I want to call on Senator Alexander as well. Senator Alexander.
Thank you, Senator Carper, and Mr. Rose, Mr. Smith, thank you both for coming. And Mayor Farmer is here from Roane County. The other residents of Roane County have been introduced. He hasn't. We thank you for your leadership. Mr. Rose, first, I want to, from all I can gather, you and the local officials did a really good job in emergency preparedness and reaction, given your resources. You moved quickly. And you've been complimented by other people, and I want to compliment you as well.
Thank you.
The situation we have is that this is a state-regulated Class 2 landfill, and mm-hmm. the federal government hasn't, for whatever reason, decided to regulate it. So you've made some good suggestions, but based on this experience, what I hope you would let us see is, apart from the cleanup, but what else should we be doing about emergency preparedness? You've suggested that TVA ought to move at least closer to the level of emergency preparedness that it has for nuclear power plants.
That's correct.
There may be something else that the state should be doing. I know Governor Bredesen would welcome that advice as well, and in fact has said so. And if there is a federal role on the emergency preparedness part, well, then Senator Carper and I and others of us ought to know that as well. So as you have this on-the-ground experience, if you'd let us know that, I would appreciate it.
Well, sir.
Mr. Smith, I'm sorry Senator Boxer left because Ms. TVA made a this is a real environmental tragedy, period, and it needs to clean it up. But I don't want it to obscure some of the things that TVA has been doing lately that I applaud. You mentioned in your remarks that burning coal is a dirty business and we need alternatives. And if I'm not mistaken, TVA has recently asked or said it would ask for 2,000 megawatts of renewable energy, looking for a way to buy that. It is said that it wants to find a way to, within a few years, install conservation and efficiency provisions that would equal the amount of electricity produced by a nuclear power plant. And it is building, two new nuclear power plants and contemplating a third. Now, those are big numbers. I mean, the nuclear power plants are 1,000 megawatts each, I guess, or more or less, and the conservation is 1,000, and renewable will be 2,000. As you look toward the future, and you're a pretty active student of energy and the environment in the Tennessee Valley, as you look to the fact that Tennessee already is 16th, Senator Carper, I'd like for you to know this as well, is that among the states, Tennessee ranks 16th in production of carbon-free energy, about 7 or 8% from hydropower, the rest from nuclear power. Obviously, we'd like for that to go up. As you look toward the future, what do you think the realistic alternatives are, and how rapidly do you think we can move toward them?
Well, thank you, Senator. I do want to acknowledge that TVA has taken some important steps in the recent past to begin to look seriously at energy efficiency, and we are heartened by that. I mean, there are some real investments that they're looking at. We also are aware of the RFP that's gone out for the 2,000 megawatts, and we look forward to getting those results back and seeing if TVA acts on them. In my written testimony, one of the things that I asked for, and I've repeatedly asked for, is I think we need a system of integrated resource planning that is a requirement. Every investor-owned utility around the TVA service territory has to go through what is called integrated resource planning, where they look at the demand side and they looked at the supply side options and they find the lowest cost. I was part of the TVA IRP review group when they did their last IRP in 1995. They have not undertaken a new IRP since then. It is unacceptable that we are 14 years now past that and TVA has not updated that plan. And I think that out in the Northwest, BPA, under the Northwest Power Planning Council, I think the Senator may be aware of this, they have a requirement for the Bonneville Power Administration to do regular check-ins. Investor-owned utilities are done it. In order for us to know what is the right mix going forward, the right way to look at all the options necessary, we need to do that planning, and it needs to be done on a regular basis in a transparent fashion that involves stakeholders. And so I would encourage this committee to look at requiring that of TVA. It is not too hard of a lift. It is comparable to what other investor-owned utilities do, and it puts everything on a level playing field. I personally think we are awash in energy in this country. We just use it horribly inefficiently, and we can be much more aggressive in meeting energy efficiency and using that. I'm excited about your vision of electric cars because they are not only the ability to clean up the transportation sector, but in smart grid technology, they become a way of actually having storage for cleaner renewable technologies like solar and others that can be done, and we can have those cars talking to the grid and communicating on a regular basis. These are the types of things that TVA, if they were a living laboratory of innovation, and we need them desperately going into the 21st century, that they could lead with if we empower them to do that and require them to have a bold vision and make sure we populate the board with people that have that vision. And that is something that you can help us provide leadership on. I am eager to see that vision go forward. You're exactly right. Important steps are being taken, but we've got to hold the agency accountable. There's not enough oversight to make sure that they follow through on the things they do. Just putting out an RFP does not mean we're getting 2,000 megawatts of renewable energy. That is the first important step, but there are other steps that must be followed. Just spending money on energy efficiency doesn't cause energy efficiency to happen. We need to work with the power distributors in the valley to make sure that happens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Madam Chair, she's back.
Well, both of us would be pleased to say you're welcome, and both of us would be pleased to recognize Senator Merkley.
Thank you very much for your testimony. There were some specific facts in some of the articles about this disaster that I don't think have been mentioned. I just wonder if either of you have insight or would like to comment on them. One is that the containment walls were made of ash. They've been referred to elsewhere as earthen. But elsewhere it's noted that they were made from ash. Another factor that's noted in the articles is that there was a decision to remove trees from the walls and that the removal of those trees may have weakened the wall if that had not been done properly because the water could follow the pathways of the roots, and once the water starts moving, it erodes its way through the wall and creates a disaster. And a third factor embedded in the articles was that while the TVA said they had no evidence of any fish kill, that there were videos of significant fish kills downstream. And I just wonder if comment on any of those factors.
Senator, I can comment on the first and the third. Indeed, there were earthen walls that we encountered that were both left after the failure and before the failure. As to the specific composition and thickness of those walls, we could refer to the engineering diagram that would show you specific information as to what that is. As far as the trees, I cannot speak to that, but as far as the fish kill incident, the county did receive several calls about fish kills and responded by sending folks into the field and requesting assistance from the Tennessee Wildlife Resource Agency, particularly their biological division. And the information that we received back from them was that the fish that were killed were indeed killed by being either washed up onto dry land and left there, or they were killed by the impact of the wave as it moved through the water. And that's all what we have been told.
Senator, I'd like to respond to that question. I'm not an engineer, and I don't want to represent myself to be one, but we have talked to engineers about this. And what I understand is that ash is a reactive element or reactive substance, and that it is not a good substance to use for structural integrity, because over time it changes, and that engineers have told me that relying on a wall of ash that is changing over time is a very difficult thing to know the structural integrity of it. And so I think it is one of those fundamental questions that needs to be explored about how EPA regulates this, as to whether they ought to be using ash walls to hold the ash itself, because it does change over time. Now, as far as the fish kills, I think the story is still developing there. I don't disagree with Mr. Rose in his assessment. I think there was literally a tidal wave, maybe as much as 20 feet in some places, that could have mechanically thrown fish out of the water. My fear is not the immediate fish kill. My fear is the long-term ecological health of the region and what ends up bioaccumulating into the wildlife over time.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. I have two questions. One is of a more personal nature, and the other is more on target with our hearing. And on the personal age, sometimes when witnesses appear before us, they have a member of their family or members of their family that are with them. And from time to time, we ask them to actually recognize and identify and introduce members of their family. I'm looking at this audience, and I'm wondering if there might be a member of either of your families that are here. Mr. Rose?
Yes, I brought my wife and my 10-year-old daughter with me. I felt that it was very important that it's not every day that someone from Rome County, Tennessee, gets to appear before a Senate committee. And I felt that it was important for my wife and my daughter to be here to see this. And I'd like for them to stand up if they would. Melissa and Jade, my daughter's a 10-year-old fifth grader at Midway Elementary, and she's very interested in the way government works. And she comes from a long line of local politicians, and I thought it'd be good for her. Thank you.
Well, that's good. What is your daughter's name?
Jade.
Jade, well, someday you may sit up here and chair this committee. You never know. Thanks for coming. Thanks for bringing your mom. Thanks for bringing your dad. Jade, I could just barely see your lips move when your dad spoke, and that's, you're pretty good at that, so well done. Mr. Smith, anybody?
Well, like Senator, I actually did not bring. I have, my wife is still in Knoxville, and I have a 2.5-year-old son who wasn't really able to make the trip up. I also was watching the banter back and forth about all the grandparents. I actually am now a new grandfather, and so I'm talking to my 2-year-old son, who is an uncle. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic. But I only have one grandson at this point in time, so I have to try to catch up with Senator Inhofe, I guess, at some point in time.
Good luck.
Thank you.
He's got a big head start on you. Well, you're good to come today, and I might add, you're very well represented on this committee by a colleague from Tennessee. The question that I'd like to ask is, there's been a fair amount of talk about mercury level in fly ash or in water, and could you comment on why that is? My understanding is if we do a better job of actually cleaning up the emission stream, we end up with fly ash that's more toxic, including substances like mercury. But if you could just give us some idea why you think there's why so much talk about the level of mercury in fly ash on water?
Well, I think obviously mercury as a neurotoxin is a chemical of great concern. There's a lot of debate, as you all both know, about the mercury maximal achievable control technology need to be implemented with coal-fired power plants. I disagree with Tom Kilgore that only relying on co-benefits is, when you have a selective catalytic reduction unit on the hot side of a scrubber, that's really all that utilities need to do to control mercury. I don't agree with that. I think we need to do more. Mercury is too dangerous of material not to be looking at other technologies to control it. I think it is not an accurate statement to say that all of these co-benefits equal 90%. I think it depends on the types of coals that are being burned and the particular the boilers and other things.
Let me say, I thought 90% sounded pretty optimistic.
Well, it may be overly optimistic, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Now, but here's the fundamental issue that I think gets back to the very reason we're here, is you can't have it both ways, where you are saying that you're getting the co-benefits of pulling the mercury out of the air and the smokestacks, and then say there's nothing in the ash, because the mercury does not disappear. If it's pulled out into the fly ash or the scrubber ash, it is going to be captured and it's going to need to be dealt with. So I think there is concern about what happens as we put more scrubbers on, and I know both you and Senator Alexander have been strong leaders on clean air regulation, and I think as we clean those up, we need to pay attention to where they ultimately go, because if they don't go out of the stack, they're going somewhere, and they're ending up in the ash, and we need to be careful. And as we deal with new technologies, we need to understand how those chemicals migrate in that ash and make sure. That's why EPA must be on the beat. They cannot be asleep at the switch here. We have got to get them to regulate this material.
Well, we'll have a new cop on the beat.
Yes.
In about two weeks. Again, let me just express our thanks to each of you for joining us today and for the work that you do, the good that you do with your lives. We appreciate your families being with us too. Family members, and I just want to say to one last time, Senator Boxer and I have indicated she is the chairman of the full committee. I, as the chairman of the subcommittee that has jurisdiction over TVA, that we intend to do our job with respect to oversight. We both at the committee level and at the subcommittee level, we're going to continue to not only be present as we watch the work cleanup that's done in conjunction with this particular disaster, but also I'm reminded of the words of an old Roberta Flack song, killing me softly. There are different ways to hurt or to kill people, and one could be like right away, and the other could be over a longer period of time. And we have about 25,000 people this year that are going to die from the stuff that we breathe. Not the stuff that we need necessarily eat or ingest, but the stuff that we breathe, some of which is actually emitted by not only TVA, but all the utilities that use particularly coal. So we want to be diligent there, too. And we fully intend to be. My hope as we leave here is that TVA will leave with a renewed commitment to be the kind of steward that they're expected to be, and to provide the kind of leadership that they're expected to provide, not just with respect to providing cost-effective electricity and energy, but also with respect to being a good environmental steward. Again, with that having been said, we thank you all for joining us today, and I wish you well. Thanks so much. This hearing is adjourned. Thank you.